Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast. I'm your host, Catholic Answers apologist and speaker, Trent Horn. I'm in my spiffy suit in a hotel room with a spiffy individual. He is Father John Parks, pastor at St. Teresa Parish. You and I go way back.
We go way back. A lot of history here.
It is. We were just talking at dinner the other night when you say things like, I remember when we did this 25 years ago.
I know. I remember you before you were Catholic, and now you're a Catholic apologist. That's pretty wild.
Yeah. So, all right. So just to give you guys the scoop. So I've known this guy when he was John Parks, core member, youth leader in our youth group at Life Teen at our parish at St. Teresa Parish. And now it's come full circle. You are the pastor.
I know. I'm the pastor of my home parish. I tell people it's as if Willy Wonka died in his will. He left me the chocolate factory. That's how wild it feels to be the pastor of your home parish.
It's just, you went back there and Father Chuck said, do you know what happened to the boy who went to seminary?
That's right.
He got everything he ever wanted.
Here I am.
Father John.
Yes, he took over when I was in third grade and then served for 29 years. Then I took over for him. It's pretty wild. Mm-hmm.
So, and to add even more of a, going back to the past, this gentleman was my sponsor coming into the church, 2002.
I'm going to get on a business card. It's my claim to fame.
It is. I think what's nice, so there's a thing called mutually assured destruction.
Okay.
It's like we both know enough
That's right.
things we would prefer people not know about our lives as youngsters 25 years ago, 20 years ago.
Yes.
So now it's like, I know it will be safely tucked away in the back of our minds.
When you said mutually assured destruction, I knew exactly where this was going. I said, yeah, he's right.
Yeah. It's something
it's not worth it.
It's what we'll reminisce about at our 20 year reunion, all that. But what I want to talk about today is we're hanging out here at the Franciscan University of Steubenville, and you're giving a talk tomorrow on woke ideology. So what's wrong with it? Because it seems like in our culture today, everyone says, well, why aren't you woke? You know, Shouldn't you be woke, awake to things? It's kind of like people will say, well, what's wrong with being woke? Are you okay being a racist? It's like, well, no, wait a minute. Why are you putting me in it's either this choice or that choice? So I just want to chat about that and what you're going to be talking about and how Catholics should approach being woke, basically.
So, great. So woke now is sometimes used as a pejorative term, you know, like not to be woke, but originally meant something like to be awake to oppressive realities, mm-hmm. specifically systemic oppression as related to racism, sex, and gender. And so what's wrong with that? We believe in a God who does justice. We believe in a God who hears the cry of the poor. We believe in a God who sets the Israelites free from slavery.
Right.
So clearly on the face of it, it would seem like a Catholic should be woke. Like we are people who want a proper social justice, right? I think one thing that's helpful is to think about the ideas that really inform the woke movement, like its dogma, so to speak. One of them is Hegel moving into Marx. Mm-hmm. So Hegel, a way to structure his thesis, antithesis, synthesis. So there's the status quo, the way things are now.
Right.
Then there are sort of contradictions within it, what we call the antithesis. And that basically resolves itself in a new synthesis. And he thought this would culminate in a utopia. And this is going on sort of endlessly. Then when you have the new synthesis, mm-hmm. it becomes the new thesis, and then it starts all back over.
So we got these people with their grief, these other people with their opposite grief. They smash into each other. It'll get better. And eventually we'll get from this conflict. We'll get the perfect thing once we get through the growing pains.
That's right. So that's why it's a progressive thing to say you want to be on the right side of history.
Oh, yeah. People are always telling me I'm going to be on the wrong side of history. I'm on the right side of Jesus, the king of history.
Amen. But the idea is like we're going to be judged by some future utopian state, and you want to be the last guy of getting of the revolution.
But that's interesting, this idea that if society determines morality, then it's like, well, things are always right if society of the majority of people says that it's right.
Yes.
So it's like, unless you believe in some kind of overarching moral standard, how do you say that a society gets better or worse? It's like it only gets different. It's like now we don't wear top hats and tails.
Yes.
But that doesn't mean we got worse. We just got different. But we seem deep down to know that, yeah, not having top hats and tails is different, but it's not a moral issue. But not having slavery anymore is better.
Yes.
But we'd have to have some kind of standard. So like, well, we would have a transcendent God to have our standard. They're judging it on, well, we're going to be judged by once we get to this future thing at the end here. So you want to be there first. You want to progress there first.
Yeah, some people have remarked that they're almost like secret Platonists, like there's some sort of ideal or form that we're tending towards.
Yeah.
Something that I like is Dr. Crafe calls progressivism chronological snobbery. If it's newer, it's better.
Yeah.
It's better. How do you know? It's newer. So Hegel, though, was a German idealist. He believed in absolute spirit. And then Marx took that idea, who's deeply influenced by Hegel, but he was a materialist. The only thing that exists is the physical world.
Right.
And then he applies that to class struggles. So there's the capitalism, and he says in the Communist Manifesto, capitalism contains within itself the seeds of its own destruction. In other words, the thesis as an antithesis, which he says will eventually resolve in this new synthesis, which will be communism, this utopia that will come, this classless society. So we have the bourgeoisie, which would be the ruling class. We have the proletariat, which is the oppressed class or the working class. And they're going to be fighting. The proletariat's going to rise up, overthrow the bourgeoisie, and we're going to move into this utopian state.
You know what is so ironic about that, though, that Marx is like, the workers are going to rise up. There's going to be this industrial workers' revolution to overthrow the capitalists. And he thought it was going to happen in England, but it ends up happening in Russia, which at that time was this totally backwards country that was a majority agrarian rural farm society, not like these industrial laborers that he says, eventually all of them are going to rise up against the factory owners and kick them out. And he's wrong about that. And he's wrong about a whole bunch of other things.
That's right. That's a great point. And somebody, I was reading a commentary on communism, and he said, you could better say communism contains within itself the seeds of its own destruction,
right?
Not capitalism. But you're right. I mean, that's one of the things that kind of confused Marxists. It's like, why didn't it happen? Wasn't the revolution inevitable? That's what Marx said, what would happen.
Right.
So I'm going to just kind of go broadly over this. And then you have something called a group of Germans who leave Germany about 1933, and they start what's called the Frankfurt School, which is they're basically thinking about why didn't the revolution happen. And these people have had ideas that have greatly impacted our culture. They encounter some ideas with Sigmund Freud that man is sexual by nature and that all of our neuroses is caused by repressed sexuality. Mm-hmm. So that's been called cultural Marxism because they shifted from class to now gender, race, and sex.
Okay, so instead of being oppressed primarily by my boss, it's like my body's oppressing me, or society's expectations of what I do with my body.
Yeah, have you ever heard in the West we have an oppressive patriarchy?
Apparently I actually belong to that. And there's okay. Very few clubs that I've been invited to, and I'm proud, like, yeah, I guess that's where I'm a part of.
Have you ever heard America's a systemically racist country?
I have heard that apparently our country is just racist in its very being, not just has some people who are racist, but that the country itself, which I only thought people could be racist. Now, I know there can be racist laws and things like that. Like when we had laws saying like you could own people of a certain skin color, obviously that's evil. But this seems to go a lot deeper than that.
That's exactly right. But I'm just trying to point out these, who is the new kind of bourgeoisie and ruling class and who's the oppressed groups.
Okay.
So this is how Marx sees the world, and everything is structured in power relationships. So I don't know, I was hanging out a couple months ago and I saw this woman walk by and she had a shirt that said, the future is female.
Well, you can't have a future without females, so you're a little right on that, but okay.
But as Catholics, we would say, we're not playing that game.
Right.
We could say the future is marriage. Or the future is the family.
Yeah.
In other words, to say the future is female says that the future is not male. In other words, there's a power struggle going on.
Oh, so males are the oppressor class, females are the oppressed class.
Precisely.
We're not complementary. One by nature subjugates the other.
We are oppositional. And the females will rise up and overthrow the patriarchy. So this, I think, is what we see embedded in a lot of wokeism. It's a way of seeing the world which reduces relationships to power. So it doesn't have room for love. It doesn't have room for truth. And then I'd say one last thing. I hope I don't lose people here. But postmodernity, I would say, is the last ingredient to wokeism. Mm-hmm. And one of the tenets of postmodernity is a narrative about narratives. In other words, that any claim to like ultimate truth is really just a mask, and you're masking oppressive power. So Jordan Peterson has pointed this out. When you talk about free speech on college campuses, is it really about free speech or... For those who have bought totally into this ideology, they think free speech itself is just a mask to keep the ruling power in power.
Well, that's because they use phrases like, I'm going to speak my truth, or this is my truth. Like the idea that there just is objective truth, that is part of like oppressive patriarchy.
That's right. That's exactly right. And if you... the movie What Is a Woman by
Matt Walsh.
Matt Walsh.
Yeah.
At one point, he's talking to a college professor, and he said, "I'm just looking for the truth." And at one point, he says, "I find that language very transphobic." And he says, "The truth?" But what you think, what does that make sense? But in postmodernity, that's one of the claims, is there is no ultimate truth. Everyone just has their own little narrative, and they're just using it to keep their power.
I'm surprised that they have not created a GIF or a GIF. I feel like it should be GIF, but I think it's GIF. Where I remember, I'm having a flashback to youth ministry. It's just, it's always happening now because he was core member and volunteer then. And in youth ministry, we always watched Jesus of Nazareth. That was before The Passion. It was
classic.
Jesus of Nazareth, the 6-part series. Count the number of times Jesus blinks in the whole movie. I think you could do it on one hand.
Yeah. It's slow talker. He's a slow talker.
Pretty impressive. But I always remember, because you always, like, confirmation retreats, we watched the scene about the crucifixion, and you got Pontius Pilate there, and he's chewing the scenery. He goes, "What is truth?"
Yes.
And he has his hands on his head like this, like, "What is truth?" And so I'm surprised they haven't co-opted that. Like, when I say, "Well, I want to figure out what's truth. What is truth?"
Yes.
It's like my truth, your truth. I have to speak my truth. And so this idea of the woke ideology is interesting, that instead of, I think I'm seeing the problem here. I want to dive into the problems and then talk about, as Catholics, how do we overcome this? It seems like the problem, and actually I just did an episode on liberation theology here on my podcast. And I think there's a very similar problem here, which is this, that especially if you tie it to theology, like, a special salvific status is found in being a member of an oppressed group. Mm. And that sin, instead of being a universal problem, it's a problem of the oppressors. So sin is a white male cis heterosexual problem. But if you are poor, like in liberation theology, the poor are the measure of what is good or bad. And they actually don't need to be brought to conversion because they are already been brought there through their poverty or something like that. As if you couldn't, like I said in the episode, there are virtuous rich people and wicked rich people. There are virtuous poor people and wicked poor people. And that you can find sin in every class, in every group. But it seems like the woke would want a woke ideology or theology wants to confine it to the oppressor groups that we have to fight against, instead of just all of us have to take stock of the universality of sin. I don't know. Does this make sense?
Absolutely. Yeah, and I think if you think about Marx, again, his categories, he was waiting for the proletariat revolution, and they're kind of the saviors of the society because they keep the revolution going and moving.
Right.
In other words, the oppressed ones are the most privileged ones. And that's a big thing we see today. Like, if you're the person who's considered the most oppressed, then you have the right to talk. The other person just should be quiet and listen.
Right.
Because the idea is, if you're in the oppressive group, you don't have the perspective that the oppressed group does. So to your point, you know, there's a famous essay by G.K. Chesterton. He wrote into a London magazine or newspaper that said, "What is wrong with the world?" And he famously wrote, "Dear sirs, I am sincerely G.K. Chesterton." And he won honorable mention. But the point is,
well,
is that sin is rooted in the human heart. Yes.
Yes, it is. In my book, What the Saints Never Said, I call into question that happened.
He never said it.
We do not, we have been unable to locate the newspaper account where this was published. So.
Allegedly. G.K. Chesterton said this.
Well, it's like stories of Martin
Luther.
Maybe
that's just your truth.
Yeah, there you go. Is that my truth? Like, isn't it true? Like, it's like in Matt Walsh's documentary. The thing that threw me the most was when he talks to the gender-affirming care lady, the blue-haired lady. And he's saying, well, how can a four-year-old know they're a woman when they think Santa Claus is real? And she says, he is real to them.
Yeah.
Well, no, he either is real or he's not. He's not real. He's real to them. And so there, it's like, you believe Chesterton wrote that? Maybe he did, because you believe it. But then, of course, it becomes all nonsensical. If I was to say to that nice blue-haired lady, transgender ideology is a bunch of garbage that hurts people. Is that true? It's true for you. Okay, so can I act like it's true for me and go and try to stop people from mutilating children? Well, no, because it's true for them. But then it becomes nonsensical. Something can't be true for all of us. So what if I said, well, it's true for me that truth is objective for everyone? Is it true for you that it's true for me? It's the self-refuting nature of relativism.
Yes.
So when we get to woke ideology, and I think a lot of people will say, well, Father, I mean, there is racism, there is bigotry out there. So, and we as a country, I mean, we had slavery, we had segregation, not just for African Americans, we also mistreated indigenous people, Asian Americans. There was actually a movie called A Gentleman's Agreement, and I think Gregory Peck was in it, and he pretends to be Jewish to go undercover to see, it was like in 1947, to see what it's like to be Jewish and how there's different areas of town that are restricted. You can't rent an apartment there if you're Jewish. And it's just so interesting to watch because it feels like a totally different world.
Yes.
When you watch a movie like this, like, this is what people did. And so we still have to heal as a country from these bad policies. So it's like, how do we balance between acknowledging the sin of racism without just giving everything away, saying, okay, now you're going to accept all of woke ideology?
Yeah, so that's a great point. So we're not saying that racism doesn't exist or that racist things don't happen.
Right.
One thing that I ask people a lot is, on a scale of 1 to 10, how racist do you think America is?
I'm going to stop you right there. The fact that you use Roman numerals, that itself... No, sorry. The fact that you use... Are you saying like 1 and then a 1 and a 0? Those are Arabic numerals that you have culturally appropriated.
Okay.
This very ranking system itself is a 10 on racism.
The Chester and Story was strike 1. This is strike 2.
You're getting really close.
Yeah.
All right. So, well, you asked, you'll, so on a scale from 1 to 10, how racist is America?
Yeah. And then to say, where do we see that? Obviously, racism was a terrible thing. It's an absolute blight on our country, and we weren't living up to our own values. When I read speeches by Reverend King, it's shocking to me what I read about right. children not being able to go to like amusement parks because they don't allow colored or like two different drinking fountains or a green book because people couldn't stay at certain diners or certain places across America. These are like shocking things to me. This only happened, or not being able to vote, 70 years ago in our country.
Right.
But I think one critique by Ben Shapiro, which I find helpful, is in a book like Something White Fragility by Robin DiAngelo, she says, even if you can't point to any individual acts, it still exists systemically. But then the question becomes is, well, where? Like, where does right. it exist?
Where is this evil? Because I think some people who promote this woke ideology would say that America would still be racist even if no people in it were racist. But then I'm like, okay, how? Like,
yeah, yes.
how would it be? Even if you had a law that could be applied unfairly if you had a racist person, then that is on the person, whether they're choosing to be bigoted or prejudicial, not something like a law or a custom or a rule. So, but that is interesting to add, like when you ask people, like, well, how do people usually answer the question?
Well, I've actually been pretty encouraged. People answer usually pretty low, and they will point out the things that historically we have gotten better. I think Ben Shapiro's response is something what you're gesturing at, which is, if we can't point to anything, then how do we fight it?
Right.
Or shadow boxing, which just sort of exists systemically. But like, point to me a policy, right. what somebody said, an action.
And like, that's how I felt. I would say, how could I change this law? Like, for example, there was like a law in, I think, Louisiana that had not been updated that said black people could not be buried in a certain cemetery. I'm like, okay, we need to change that. Just erase. There you go. We've helped to improve remove the evil of racism.
That's right.
But if you can't say yes, but where is it either in this act needs to stop or this law needs to be changed? But if it's all this amorphous thing, then it's like you're creating something that's not really there at all. Or you're finding something that is a legitimate problem that could have a lot of different reasons. Like for example, I believe that, you know, one reason African-Americans have poverty rates in this country is because of evils in the past, like redlining, where they were prohibited from owning homes by racist zoning laws. Then the inability to buy a home prevents someone from creating generational wealth to pass on to your children.
Yes.
But now, thankfully, redlining is illegal. We have special loans that are even now given to people who are in different economic situations, for better or worse. Whether those loans are a good idea or not is a different debate. But still, it's hard. Like, you know, you've been set back a little bit, and now is the process of remedying that. But I feel like the idea is, oh, well, we're just going to point to every disparity and say it's caused by racism right now. And that's hard for me to, I feel like that's where things start to become very unwieldy.
That's right. And part of that is wokeism is often an ideology of grievance, that we have a unity. As Catholics, we would say we're human beings by universals, that we're rational animals, that we're made in God's image and likeness. Well, they would say a group is formed by a grievance of who they're against. So part of being black is understanding white oppression. But the problem is if you call everything oppression, then we actually make it more difficult to fight real oppression. Do you see what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
If we're calling everything racist, then it's harder to point out real systems of racism. It's easier to just sort of like scoff it off.
It's like the boy who cried wolf, sort of. But you're right. Like if everything I do or everything I don't do, like yes. inaction, is racism, I think it was the Ibram X. Kendi who writes on how to be an anti-racist, has said that something is racist if it does, a policy is racist if it does not decrease disparities between whites and blacks or whites and minorities. So people have asked him like, okay, so capital gains tax doesn't seem to really affect disparities. It doesn't do anything to address disparities among races. Is that racist? He said, yeah. I mean, you know, if I go on a hike on Saturday, that doesn't treat race relations in America. Is that racist? I think I have a problem that the Catholic Church, we have a long tradition of combating racism. And we have great examples of heroes who have stood up against it, even within the church. I think of St. Martin de Porres, for example, who was denied the ability to enter into the priesthood because of racists, but he didn't give into a woke kind of victimization to lash out in anger, but he persevered in holiness without refusing to acknowledge the evils that are present. So if you see where I'm going with this.
Yes, yes, yes. I also think of Father Augustus Tolton, who was a priest who did heroic things to become a Catholic priest, even though he was a black man in America. I think one of the things you're pointing out is about the way that language is used.
Yes.
Like, for instance, the word equity, which sounds like a good word, which is something we should all want. But usually for the woke, it means inequality of outcome. And that if there's an inequality of outcome, it's because of some sort of oppression, not because of merit or because of disposition. For instance, there is no oppressive system preventing 5'11" like Irish guys from making the NBA. I had just as good a chance as anyone else, but I didn't make it. It's because of merit. The best players play.
Right.
And I'm not one of them. I couldn't make my high school team. Anyway, that's a side note.
Bugsy Moles? Wait, Muggsy Bowles.
Muggsy Bogues.
Muggsy Bogues.
5'3".
I know. I can barely hang in there with the sports references. But otherwise, you're right. That there's. I think it deals with an oversimplification of things. And anytime you try to... A lot of social problems that we face, and as Catholics, we should confront them, but we have to be hesitant about simple solutions.
Yes.
That usually, because people are complicated. You do, as a priest all the time, when you sit down and talk with someone, what's going on with your life, it's rarely, oh, this is why you're messed up. It's a whole host of things
that's
coming
right.
together.
And one of the, I would say, dogmas of wokeism is that that systems themselves or structures can be racist, for instance. But the Catechism says that although there are structures of sin,
right.
they're always rooted in personal sin.
Yes.
So that at the end of the day, it comes down to a person, right?
Right.
So it just can't exist somewhere in the ether, but it actually, a person at the end of the day has a responsibility for it. Whether it's negligence or cowardice or malice, right. they're allowing this evil to be perpetuated.
On the point about everything being racist, I think what I want to drive home is that is such a negative attitude where if you label everything, everyone, and you're always, it's sort of like in Catholic circles when we say everybody's a heretic. It's like, oh, that guy's a heretic. Oh, how did he do? He did that at Mass. That's heresy. Then you become numb to, no, oh, that really is heresy.
Yes.
Wait, nope, that's because you end up, because just because someone doesn't sell, you know, a mass, does something eye roll worthy at a mass, I'm like, oh, geez, that's not necessarily, it's not heresy even. Even there, it just might be a liturgical abuse or, you know, it's not liturgically correct. Heresy is a specific definition. It's the obstinate post-baptismal rejection of something that must, of a dogma, something that must be believed with divine and Catholic faith. So, but it's like, if everything's racist, then eventually it's like, look, if everything I do is racist, I just don't care anymore. I feel like it causes people, instead of raising them to virtue, it's like, who cares? I'm never going to make anybody happy. So yes. I'm just going to stop caring about this in general. That's what I worry, that in trying to encourage people to fight for social justice, that's another word that's malleable, right? Because people ask, are you for social justice? Well, yeah, of course. Catechism, the compendium talks about that. But it depends what you mean by
that
term.
We'd be against any unjust discrimination. We'd be against any barriers that prevents equality of opportunity.
Right.
But we would not say equity is equality of the outcomes, that there could be just, you know, people make decisions, people have different merit, people have different gifts. That's how life works.
Yeah. And so once again, when we are looking at these ideologies, It's important to look at them, see the truth that is present there. It's sort of like when, as the church has evangelized throughout history, it baptized things that were true and good in pagan cultures.
That's right.
Like, for example, like worshiping in a building for just worship. That wasn't something the church did till like the fourth century. Because before that, we just worshiped in houses. And it's like, should we worship in temples? Like, isn't that a pagan or Jewish thing? We can have a building dedicated to God. It doesn't mean that we're idolaters. We just don't practice idolatry in them. You know, we can have statues to commemorate holy men and women of God to remind us of what God has done for us, even if pagans worship statues. So we can be, we can fight social justice, we can combat racism, but without the excesses of those who come at it without a proper orientation. I mean, honestly, as a Catholic, one of my favorite resources to talk about racism is the papal encyclical Mit Brennender Sorge, S-O-R-G-E. I'm probably messing up my German. It's one of the only encyclicals written in German.
Yes. With burning anger? Is that what it's called?
With anger, burning desire. It was in 1938 and it was smuggled into Nazi Germany, yes, to be read, to talk about those who have lied or have fallen from the faith in saying that one race is superior to another. And not mincing words, when you say that from the Vatican in Europe, right before the outbreak of World War II, it's like you're putting yourself on the line with that. But that's, you know, but it goes back to that of opposing racism, though understanding the root of racism is the evil in the hearts of men.
Amen.
So, all right. Well, Father, thank you so much. Are there any resources you'd recommend for people to learn more about the subject? Yeah,
the best book that I've read on it that is called Awake, Not Woke by Noel Mehring. It's
yes.
The simplest, clearest. It's just very excellent. She talks about origins, where it came from, the sort of the main dogmas.
Yeah.
And talks about like how it institutionalizes itself in our culture, then finally restoration. So I think getting educated about it is really helpful when you start to see these lenses.
Yeah, yeah.
It just gives you a clarity to be able to fight it much clearer. And when people use them, they could be going through a phase. You know, they could have gone to college and got these ideas. They could be parroting a script,
right,
or they could have really bought into it. And I think once you get more educated, you're able to, through questions, discern whether this is kind of a phase or whether they've really bought into this ideology. Because everyone wants to be just. Everyone wants to be good.
Sure.
So it's very attractive on that level.
Yeah. So I think it's important. Once again, it's all about balance, that we don't want to just we don't want to dogmatically reject something because it comes from outside of the church, because God has given everyone the light of human reason. And so you can identify, oh, this is wrong. People shouldn't be treated this way. Or we have a system where it's being manipulated to hurt particular people. And we need to address that. We need to recognize prejudice. So we don't want to dogmatically reject, but we also don't want to uncritically accept, to say we just have to believe this because this is the current fad or zeitgeist. It's about following what the church teaches to thread the needle.
Amen.
Amen to that. Well, thank you guys so much. And I just hope you all have a very blessed day.
If you like today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content. For more information, visit TrentHornPodcast.com.